Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, where we discuss everything in the Hooniverse. Join us each week as we bring you news, rumor, and recap.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing episodes that have already aired, as well as news that's already public knowledge. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. And now your hosts, Jay Witten.
All right, fine. Put logic into my stuff. See how it is.
Melissa Mazza.
Drink every time you blink.
And special guest Keir Hansen.
I gotta go.
Hello and welcome everybody to Gallifrey Public Radio. As always, I am Melissa. Tonight we are going to be talking about a town called Mercy, and I'm here as always with Jay. How are you, Jay?
Doing pretty good.
Good. And tonight we also have Keir joining us. How are you?
Outstanding.
Good. So everyone all queued up to watch the episode?
I think
Yeah. We did have a couple things that came out this week. I mean, nothing major, just some they confirmed the time for the Christmas special airing on BBC, which is at 5:15 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it doesn't really affect us here in the States, I guess, but hey, it's news.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been some Classic Who stuff that's been going on. They're remastered Spearhead from Space, which is one of the first Third Doctor serials. They remastered it for high definition. It was one of the two serials, I believe, that was actually filmed on film, so they're able to go back and restore it like that.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to see how much they can really improve upon. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, granted, yes, done on a film, that's understandable, you know, it changes the whole format and the feel and the tone, mm-hmm. of the episode and of the series, but still, you know, if you try to crisp it up too much, is it going to make other things stand out that you really don't want to put too fun?
This is from the 70s, so, you know, there's things that, you know, were very easy to cover up back then, and if you start examining it with a magnifying glass, yeah, you're going to start to see the cracks in it, so.
Yeah.
I got it. Lens flares.
There we go.
Lens flares.
There's also, Netflix has decided to up its ante on the classic Doctor Who stuff. They've actually got 18 different serials now. This is up from, I think they had 5 recently. I mean, just some of the hallmarks, but
yeah, primarily a lot of Tom Baker stuff. It was really a lot of Fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
I think all told, because I had kept them all on there. I kept them on the queue just so I could tap mm-hmm. into them, you know, from the phone or while I was sitting in an airport or something like that. And I think it might have been more than 5 over the last year or so. They might have had as many as 8
it's
or
9. It's been steadily increasing. I know when I started watching Doctor Who, I'd look back to see what. What classics they had, and they had the Aztecs, what was it, the Ark in Space,
mm-hmm.
and I think the Sylvester McCoy, the Curse of Fenric, I think it was, and then like 2 others that I don't even remember which ones they were. So mm-hmm. they've definitely been improving and adding more. So now they're actually up to 18 of them on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty good cross section too. I mean, you can get a kind of a feel for a lot of them that kind of jump around a little bit and play with them.
I think they've got at least one from every Doctor with the exception of Patrick Troughton, I think. His was the only one I can't...
Which one was Patrick Troughton?
The Second Doctor.
Oh, okay.
Which a lot of the Second Doctor stuff is the stuff that has been destroyed or lost or whatever that we just don't have anymore, so... Yeah, it's understandable that we're not going to get a lot of that on here, but
mm. yeah. So. Well, there are means. I would like to let the record show that I have now, thanks to the fact that a lot of my my contacts and bookmarks were saved out in the cloud after hard drive death, my Classic Who collection has been restored.
Yes.
And has been restored at a better compression rate. So that I don't have to designate an entire terabyte external drive to host the damn thing. So
All right.
Jay, we'll talk.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll be coming to visit you with my external hard drive.
Exactly.
So,
I have Doctor Who news. Matt Smith told the Radio Times that that the Doctor is attracted to Jenna Louise Coleman's character. He calls her a hot chick in the interview, and it says, Smith says, "What's interesting with the new companion is that it changes the way he is and affects his personality. I think in one way or another, the Doctor's always attracted to his companion, and he's certainly taken by this striking young lady." And it talks about how he's lonely and removed from the universe, and then, like, in the Christmas special, like, suddenly there's this girl.
See, I have to wonder, is this actually something that's going into the plot, or is this something that's going into his portrayal, or is this Matt Smith just saying, yeah, she's hot, of course the Doctor's going to be attracted to her. You know, I can't help but wonder which camp this falls into.
I think it would be a bit of a mistake to overtly play up the romantic attraction going in that direction, you know, from Doctor back to companion.
Especially since he just had a relationship with River Song, I don't think that the audience is quite ready for him to be onto another girl.
Well, I mean, even River Song, I think, was a bit rough. I mean, if you look at the classic Doctor, he was never romantically involved, like, at all. You know, he might have a fling or something with some character.
He accidentally married the Aztec chick.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, that kind of stuff going on, but he never had a romantic relationship with any companion or anything like that. Then you've got the new Who with, you know, automatically Rose being the female love interest, and then, you know, thankfully that got nipped in the bud before it actually fundamentally changed the show.
Well, and it didn't. I was actually going to say that I think that I liked that there was just kind of something smoldering for most of it. It was never like an overt romantic thing, but they really were like, you know, male, female, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It was just, I was okay with it because I didn't know better at the time. So I was okay with that love interest. Then you know, River came in, and all of a sudden, she's the love interest. And I'm like, wait a minute, no, he's in love with Rose. This is, you know, this is all happening too quick. And then it's, you know, they got married, but it was in an aborted timeline, so are they really married, and all this stuff. And now you've got Matt Smith saying this, and I'm like, you know, can we just get back to what Doctor Who's really supposed to be about?
Well, yeah.
Alright, I'm done fanboying.
Your opinions may vary.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Smith says that he's always attracted to his companion. That's very telling if that's how he is playing it, you know?
I think that's just Matt Smith thought.
Yeah.
I've always been terribly attracted to all the people I've been with.
But I mean, that affects his portrayal.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
We'll get a little taste of that tonight, I think.
Right. Well, unless there's anything else, I think we're about ready to start this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got A Town Called Mercy tonight, and starting from the zero mark on mine, at least. All right. So, and we'll go ahead and start in 3, 2, 1, go. It's the probe droid from Star Wars.
I think they're definitely trying to mislead you with this voiceover. They're talking about the Doctor.
Oh, they do that all the time. They did that.
They're about to do this right here with this guy.
I remember Amy's voiceover at the beginning of Good Man Goes to War. When she's talking to her unborn child and talking about there's a man out there, he's been out there for centuries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That whole build-up. Yay, it's the cowborg.
Yeah, I mean, they really...
See? There's one more, the Doctor, but it's not the Doctor.
But it is the Doctor. No, it's just not the Doctor.
Yes.
Lowercase the.
Yeah. I just actually, I've had so much free time lately. I rewatched The Lodger today, and he's trying to explain how he's going to introduce him as the Doctor to the football team, but everyone like accepts it right away.
It's like, I can't call you just the Doctor. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, just a sports thing.
And this is one of the few episodes that we've seen recently that has, like, absolutely no TARDIS in it. I mean, they just start here. They don't come out of the TARDIS, nothing. It's just, you know, it all takes place in this town. As opposed to, you know, the low-budget episodes where they spend a lot of time in the TARDIS and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I use this quote all the time now. I see that more like a suggestion, kind of like dry clean only. Unfortunately, nobody at work gets it. Muggles.
They don't even get the joke, or they don't get the reference.
Most of them don't even get the joke. Yeah.
Career change. All right, this brings to mind, we had a theory going for a little while, and this was based on some discussion going on in various forums.
The light bulbs. The
light bulb thing. Yeah. I did not see that carried out in Power of Three or Angels Take Manhattan.
In the Power of Three, it wasn't so much that they focused on lights like that, but in the background of almost every shot you had, like, Christmas lights or twinkly lights or things like that. So there were always lights predominant in the background. And then,
but in the background though, I mean, you could say, you know, for every scene, you're going to have some light sources somewhere.
It was just a different style of light that they were usually using.
What was that episode where River Song said the light needs changing on the TARDIS?
That is Angels Take Manhattan.
Okay, so there's that in there.
Okay.
And, of course, you've got the angels manipulating the lights, which they always do.
Oh, right, we're causing the dimming, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, now how many of you thought that that was originally River Behind the Bar?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely had a pause there. And we just talked over one of my favorite lines in this when he's asking for tea. The strong stuff. Leave the bag in.
I'm about to lynch the Doctor.
Now, see, like I mentioned last week about the time in relation to his bow tie color, he's wearing a blue bow tie here.
Okay, which means that he is in
the past.
His past. Okay.
Or in the past, in regards to the present, like our.
That just hurt my head.
Well, hold on. I don't know where it comes, but somewhere in this episode, he says something about Rory leaving his phone with Henry VIII or something, but we don't actually see that or see them with Henry VIII until Power of Three.
Yeah.
So I think this happens before Power of Three. There was like 7 weeks where they're traveling with the Doctor or something. This was in there.
Mm-hmm. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Yeah.
See, he actually does kind of resemble Peter Weller.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's RoboCop in the Old West. I can't stand most of the American accents in this.
True. I personally can't stand Rory's costume in this. I think he's wearing Uggs and some jacket that looks like a tea cozy.
I never noticed that his boots are over his jeans there.
Yeah. Well, you can't wear Uggs and skinny jeans without looking like a snow bunny.
Yeah, but he's Rory, so we'll let it pass.
Maybe they just came from like a skiing vacation.
Yeah, but they were supposed to be going to Mexico. I mean,
Oh yeah.
Now this was a plot fail, as far as I was concerned.
Oh yeah, it was a horribly missed opportunity.
That could have been him running back to the tar to say, "Oh, I've got just the hat for the occasion," and gets the Stetson that River shot a hole through.
Because I can see him holding on to that. I definitely think that he still has it.
Yeah.
And they should have put that in. They really did miss an opportunity there.
Because I like the reoccurrence of the Stetson far more than I like that stupid Fez.
Which, actually, the Fez has not made a reappearance. It's just... Yeah,
that's right.
For some reason, it's just the staple. He's worn a Stetson more than he's worn the Fez, and yet people still associate the Fez.
Yeah, at Comic-Con, every doctor has a Fez on.
Meh. Lots of great character actors in this one.
Yeah. No, you're not. You're a doctor. I love that look on his face, like, quick, give me back my hand, please.
In a sense.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the most disturbing thing about this character is just the ease that he is laying this on right here.
Mm-hmm. Well, but then you ask yourself, is there some validity to it? Is it a matter of him finding a way to better himself, clear his conscience, clear his slate?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely convinced himself that he's doing good, but, I don't know. I feel like there should be some carryover guilt there. Just give me like a little twinge or something when you lie blatantly. But no.
That's okay.
Now see, now he's saying he's 1,200 years old. I mean, this doctor just radically ages. Mm-hmm. Either that or, rule number one.
Well,
yeah.
No, I choose to believe him because I think, he spent 97 years going with Nefertiti and Riddell and not like all these people that we never heard of until recently.
As long as he wasn't alone during those periods, because we've seen from past experience when he truly is traveling alone.
Well, I mean, I think he for the most part probably was traveling alone, and just picked up people for random adventures here and there.
I love the sound that the gun makes, like it's popping and starting up and everything. It's not this smooth Star Trek style phaser. Susan. I mean, while it is humorous, it does seem kind of weird that they throw a joke like that in here.
Yeah, they probably should have used a male horse for the gag, too. Anyway.
Well, you know, he's a preacher, not a veterinarian.
Poor guy.
I think it's in this particular episode the reactions that you end up yielding out of Amy are more interesting than the reactions to his backstory that you get out of the doctor.
Yeah.
Especially when he starts, you know, bringing into the fact that, you know, you're a mother and
Yeah, right here. Yeah, and honestly, this was one of the first times I was like, oh yeah, she is a mom, isn't she? It's like, it gets brushed over so often.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of her though. She can't have kids now. She didn't even get to see her only child grow up, really. Yeah.
Now see, this is the part that really bothers me, is that before he's putting on an act, he's got a cover story, he's going with it. Here, it's like he's actually starting to divulge some of his history and say, you know, yeah, I guess I really am kind of a father. And it's the way that he portrays it just kind of shows he's convinced himself that he's innocent. Mm-hmm. And that's chilling.
Go, Susan, go. This exchange.
Yeah. Oi, don't swear. I remember Matt Smith in an interview saying that this was one of his favorite episodes to do because he got to, you know, he got to be a cowboy, you know, ride a horse across the desert, learn to do, you know, quick draws and things like that.
He gets to do everything.
Here's a thought, follow the wire.
It's a good thing we have a genius like the doctor on the case.
Brilliant concealment job.
That is. That's very well disguised.
So you hide the giant egg by making it look like a giant potato.
Look, it's one of the dinosaur eggs from last episode.
I'm really thinking that's Mork from Ork's ship.
I don't know. Mork's definitely did look like an egg. This one looks more like a suppository.
Or a giant Tic Tac.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to think of. A Tic Tac, definitely.
I'm kind of mad that my brain didn't go there first, but okay. I like this little montage here.
Inconspicuous.
Now, you know, I don't know if you guys knew this, but this whole episode was actually shot on a set of an old spaghetti western. This was an actual set that they had out in Spain, and they just kind of co-opted it. And
yeah,
that's kind of cool. I like the fact that you can scattered around the planet. You've got these replicas of towns that from a time period that only lasted about 10 or 15 years, but we've put together about 50 years worth of film material honoring that time frame.
Yeah.
The computer's response in this reminds me of something out of a Douglas Adams piece.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
We'd like to thank you for all of your involvement. We'll personally enjoy blowing you to small pieces.
I love that the sales pitch is like, you know, incinerating intruders for over 900 years. Really? Yeah, this short little scene right here, just, I love this, how expressive Matt Smith is with very little movement. You can just tell how much it disturbs him with very little expression.
Yeah.
Yeah, very Peter Weller.
Yeah. I like that line.
Yeah. Mm.
As far as he can tell.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Even though I did the programming.
Yeah. I like how, you know, villain Jex is automatically comes out as soon as he takes the glasses off. That's how you can tell. It's like Clark Kent and Superman.
Get some interesting Smith.
Yes.
Why? What happened to his eyebrows? He'd be so much more expressive if he had darker eyebrows.
They sit pretty low on his skull.
A what? You know, aliens I can deal with, but what was that?
Give him credit. He plays this line very closely.
Yes, yeah.
He doesn't go sinister. He doesn't go mad scientist. He keeps it pretty well.
He's like, yeah. He's like, I know this is serious, but this is what had to be done. Mm-hmm.
Which is why you never can completely hate the guy.
Yeah, and I mean they really did do a very good job in this episode of making sure everything was very, very gray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like, you know, the cyborg isn't completely good and completely innocent, and neither is Jex, and you're really not sure who is in the right.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I'm thinking if you were going to put a drinking game around this particular episode, this is just the way that I think on a regular basis, that a couple of the rules would have to be every time you hear the gunslinger's gun wind up or wind down, mm-hmm. or anytime someone holds up their hands in front of them in a defensive posture, one of the whoa, 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 kind of
yes.
You get a lot of that too.
Hell, I'd even throw in any time Isaac is, you know, uncharacteristically good. I mean, you don't get that level of good in any human nature.
Yeah.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Whoa, whoa.
I'm telling you, well, we're into this about 22 minutes. I'd have a good buzz on by now.
Oh, yeah.
Come on out, everybody. There's a ruckus in the street.
And I guess I would add drink when you hear a bad American accent. I didn't notice it until just said that, but some bad ones are coming up.
See, this part bothered me.
Yeah. Here's where the show went off the rails as far as I was concerned.
Him grabbing the gun just really...
Yeah, I remember Twitter exploding when this aired.
See, my reaction there wasn't, what the heck is the doctor doing? I was like, whoa, Matt Smith just did not get it there. I do have to say, I love Amy for calling him out here.
This is not how we roll. Love that he mentions the Master and the Daleks.
Mm-hmm. This exchange here just really is probably one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Well, this leads us into some better material that we get out of him in the episodes to follow as well. Little moments, doesn't really carry through entirely, doesn't, you know, it's not an entire episode's worth. We're not talking, you know, the end of time episodes or anything here.
Mm-hmm.
But you get some moments, and this is definitely one of them.
I like that he calls her Amelia there. Why doesn't he step back over the line?
Guilt.
Why doesn't he just take one step back?
Well, you could take that in a number of directions. You could say, you know, maybe because of the fact that he still sees the face of the individual that he began with, that he feels he can still reason. Maybe it's just a matter of, you know, infatuation with seeing what's become of his original creation. Mm-hmm. There could be a lot of things that kind of stay him.
But, I don't know, it's nitpicky. It's one of those things like, you know, anytime I remember growing up and anytime my dad was watching TV, I could walk past the room and hear, shoot the tires! It's a great plot point, and it definitely moves the plot along in the area they needed to.
My favorite continuity errors is coming up right here.
Oh, he puts it on his jacket.
On his jacket, yeah. So it's on his lapel. And it will jump in a scene, I believe.
Oh,
it's not there. Oops, And it's back in the lighthouse. Well, they were shooting during a golden hour, so they were losing daylight. They had to probably do this across 2 days' takes.
Probably. Calling out a showdown on at noon in a Western? Man.
According to the wiki, this is the first Western on TV, you know, Doctor Who, since 1966.
Wow. Yeah. Good. I think it's something, it's a trope that gets overused, so I'm glad they haven't tapped into it very often.
Yeah. Good but point. I mean, they hit all the marks with this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that they're using an old set in Spain.
I mean, they went Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, you know, the Three Amigos at the end. See, and I feel like the Doctor wouldn't have even put it on.
Put it on backwards.
Exactly, yeah. That I could see. If you put it on backwards, but no.
Been greedy. Would have had the holster with a stalk of celery sticking out of it. That would have been killer.
I would have settled for a sonic screwdriver.
That's always in the breast pocket.
Yeah, I know. It's a Western. You can change things up. Yeah, I've got this urge to watch Firefly now.
Mm-hmm.
Space westerns.
Now, the kid here is also from... oh, God, why am I not placing it?
I have no idea.
Just saw him in something, too. I will not touch IMDb. I will not touch IMDb.
I will.
I like that. He calls him down, like, so you're 18.
Yeah. Like how quickly the townspeople disperse. Okay, everybody scatter.
Oh wait, scene's one kid over. Decided not to? Oh, okay.
Good enough for me too.
Hold on, I have been on IMDb trying to find this kid. Do you know what the character's name is?
I don't think he has a name. They never say anything.
Look for Jimmy. They're always named Jimmy.
Boy with gun.
I don't think it's on IMDb.
Yeah, who is this Undertaker? I remember hearing something about him being something. I don't remember, but.
Way to give us something to go on.
That actor has probably been in some production of something.
Something else that I heard of.
See, now you're just becoming a douche.
Pretty much. Now you're just baiting the doctor. It's like, yeah.
You hear things when you close your eyes?
Isn't that how it works?
Just makes me think of Ghostbusters. Shh, listen, do you smell something?
Yeah. I like how he turns his head there. It reminds me of like a little kid. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to listen to what you're talking about. So
yeah, I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
I feel like we should be talking more, but there's a lot of good dialogue in this
episode. Yeah, there is. Powerful.
It's going to be one of those episodes that, you know, you really can't just listen to without watching the show, though.
Yeah, for those of you watching at home, if you're not actually watching the episode, I'm juggling at the moment.
Yeah, picture...
baby geese? I think they were a bit heavy-handed trying to draw similarities between these two, though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, the Doctor, they wrote the Doctor, they wrote the Alien Doctor.
But trying to draw the connection in terms of, you know, what you feel responsible for, or trying to see some sort of a connection, or at least imply some connection to the audience that our doctor, the doctor, is supposed to empathize with him because of what he's wrought over the centuries in terms
right. of... It just feels kind of out of place in this episode. Like, he hasn't been feeling that way lately. Like, I would say Doctors 9 and 10 were so haunted by what he had done.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Smith doesn't usually do that. And I think this episode is trying to call back to that. And it's like, you can't just pull that out of nowhere when he hasn't really been acting like that.
Right. And to just sort of write it with a broad stroke from Amy's line about saying, if this is what happens when you travel alone for too long, well, okay, I can understand that might be what's actually happening there, but to throw me into that in an episode and just say, oh, by the way, 300 years has passed for the Doctor.
Right, and his personality is different. Mm. We're not going to show you how it got there.
I don't think Matt Smith could look genuinely tough if you tried.
Well, you could take one of his eyes out and he'd still look like a baby.
Does he even have facial hair?
I can't picture him yet.
There goes the clock tower. Brown going to use?
It needs a more Western soundtrack. That's what's wrong with this episode.
I kind of like the mix that it has, though. You know, it's got its... And here's the Three Amigos reference. But, yeah, it's got a good mix between traditional-sounding Western stuff and the, you know, the Dr. Who music that Murray Gold is so famous for.
Mm-hmm. A chorus and banjo.
not Firefly, but you know, it'll be okay.
Now I really want to watch Firefly. And RoboCop.
Stupid little girl, sit your butt back down.
Oh, I get so Carl. Mad at this kid.
Stay in the house, Carl.
See, nobody jumped up and started beating her butt. I don't buy that. So, alright, he hears the people screaming every time he closes his eyes, but when he actually hears people screaming, that's his breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's what it takes to turn it over, is not, you know, not memories.
Maybe.
Gun winds down, drink. Now, let's see, the doctor rode out there on horseback.
And it took forever and a day.
Gun winds up. Gun winds down. I'm telling you. Now, Lotto.
Now, see, he has the glasses back on, so we know that he's good now. He's made his decision to be good.
They did this on Lost for a season where Charlie wore his hood up when he was bad and down when he was good.
Some of the small notes that you get across the gunslinger's screen displays are kind of interesting. Little things that are happening down in the corner when someone is wounded and it says life signs deteriorating, or he's scanning the doctor and he's a bicardial life form and things like that.
Yeah. It's like a video game.
I mean, that computer really does belong in Hitchhiker's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like
self-destructing. Have a nice day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm waiting for it to say, you know, have a nice day at the end of the countdown. Kind of like in Spaceballs.
Mm-hmm.
Have a pleasant day.
And he blows himself up.
So now, for the second concurrent week, we have the villain, quote-unquote, blowing up in their own ship.
True.
That could carry over into the next one, but we don't know who all's on all seven ships.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Construction.
I can't help but wonder what all that stuff is in his bandolier.
Yeah, I'm not really certain. Snacks? I would carry snacks. Looks like a couple of spark plugs.
Yeah.
There's the TARDIS.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the TARDIS is in here. They just don't spend any time
in it.
It
doesn't feature, yeah.
This felt very Back to the Future right here.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy even
a lot of moments through it.
The guy even kind of reminds me of
a young Marty.
Yeah. And here's the innocuous female voice.
Aww. I like it.
Yeah.
For a standalone, kind of feel good. I get it. I'm all right with that.
Yeah. It falls into that. It's a fun episode. Don't expect too terribly much from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the week that follows, I think, did a much nicer job of giving you a lot more that you can sink your teeth into for a standalone episode.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It advanced the story for a couple of different premises that we've been following through, you know, season 6 and into 7. Brings back Rory's dad. How can you go wrong with Brian's log?
You're not really going to call it that, are you?
That's just great. And Rory and his pants.
Yeah, I mean, this was a better episode than Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Yeah, by far.
But
everything's a better episode.
Yeah. But you know, it's a fun episode, but you know, it's not going to be remembered as one of the greats. You know, this is not going to be City of Death 20 years down the road.
Yeah.
It's a decent little fill. You know, it gives you a moment. You know, you've got your good Amy and Doctor moment, so that you've got a nice little, you know, rope it back in, nice little connection to what the rest of the season's predominant theme is, or at least the first half of the season's predominant theme. Mm. And, you know, gets you out of it cleanly at the end of it all. Nice little happy Hollywood ending.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what this first part of the season was supposed to be, was just individual movie-style episodes, and that's this fit that framework perfectly. It's not really something that I care to see very often, but you know, it would fit as a, hey, I want to watch an episode of Doctor Who without needing too much of, you know, yeah, it's, this one would fit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'd give this one, I'd probably give it a solid 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm absolutely fine with that.
Yeah, same here.
Nothing in it really offended me. Nothing really, really pulled me out of the episode too often. There were a couple of things I disagreed with, but I mean, nothing glaring that said, oh, no, okay, forget it, I'm out.
You mean you're not a member of one of the extremist Susan groups?
No.
There are actual groups now that are, you know, in support of Susan or, you know, than the religious nuts that are, you know, it's an abomination and whatnot. I'm like, it's one line from a sci-fi show, and these people are getting all up in arms about it. It's like, really?
Of course. I didn't know that, but I believe it.
Why not? What else have you got to do on a Saturday night?
Exactly.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, I mean, this episode was a solid three, but let's face it, like, we're not really discussing it now. Like, it didn't give so much meat that we have to talk now and discuss for the next hour, you know? I think that's pretty much it.
Next week I'm really looking forward to. I'd have to say Power of Three is definitely one of my favorites from this little batch here, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look forward to seeing it again.
Yeah. Unless you guys have anything else, we'll go ahead and wrap up.
I think one thing that I will just say, now that, you know, with the last two that you've had back to back, you had two opportunities where, in the previous episode on Dinosaurs, you had a very clear, cut and dry villain.
Yeah.
Straight up, no remorse, no turning back, no change whatsoever from his final moments. You know, screaming off into oblivion, still unchanged from the get-go. Here you've got no clear villain.
Mm-hmm.
You've got someone who has done despicable things, recognizes them, may or may not completely own up to them, or does within his moments, has his epiphany, but you can never really label him as the antagonist through the episode.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that did get me so irritated about Solomon was they did such a good job with this one of making it, you know, I don't want to say ambiguous, but, you know, just you're not able to define these characters that, yeah, it just made Solomon even more, you know, glaringly, you know, one-dimensional. And that's...
Yeah, some of the most compelling counterpoints you can have to your hero is a, and I'm going to use very large quotes on this, a villain, because I wouldn't consider Jax to necessarily be a villain. Mm-hmm. Part that you can understand to a certain degree, or that you can say, all right, I may not agree with him, but I see where he's coming from.
Yeah, and those are always the best villains, are the ones that you can, you know, you look at and see, say, given the right situation, I can see myself going down that path. It's not something that I want to acknowledge about myself, but it's the truth that this is something that is within the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those are always the most compelling villains.
Definitely. And I want to clarify, last week I said that that Solomon reminded me of Caves of Androzani, was such a broad villain, like, you know, just so black and white. But I would like to clarify, I think the Phantom of the Opera knockoff of Caves of Androzani was more nuanced than Solomon.
That's fair. That's fair.
Right, well, I guess that's about it. So this has been episode 16 of Gallifrey Public Radio, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Have something you want to say or just want to say hello? Send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or leave us a comment on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. We love getting feedback from listeners, so feel free to share your thoughts anytime. Music by Ronald Inio and Retcon Addict. And hang on a second, my stuff just jacked up on me, damn it.
That's a technical term, right?
Exactly, yeah. No.
I'm done bitching now.
Until the episode starts, right?
Exactly!